Law School, episode number 9.
Hi, I'm Jacob Kaufman. I just graduated from first year law school at the University of Western Ontario.
And my name is Omar Haretta. I'm going into my second year at the University of Western Ontario.
I'm also going to my second year, just to clarify.
Are you really, Jacob? You sure about that?
Yeah, well, you know, we'll see what happens if no barring earthquakes or other such events. So, speaking of leaving first year and going to second year, exams. How did you find exams, Omar?
I actually enjoyed some of them, surprisingly enough.
Some of them were good. I found it, I think, actually less stressful than the first set of exams we did.
Yeah.
Because we'd already been through it. It wasn't as mystifying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things people said about exams, I wasn't sure about, like, that you'll spend all your time in the library.
Uh-huh.
That's completely not true. They close the library at 8 o'clock before some of our exams.
That's true. You only spend about 12 to 14 hours a day.
Yeah, that's
right?
Not an entire day.
No. And then you put in the other 5 hours that when you got home, and you still got a good 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night, right?
Easily.
And you do it without coffee, right?
I do. I occasionally do drink coffee, but I'm trying to postpone this coffee addiction until at least 2 years from now.
Okay. Well, let's see if you can hold off. I'm already hitting the Red Bulls and hitting them pretty hard, so.
Yeah, well, you can give people a deal on Red Bulls, I heard.
Yes, this is true. Although, I'm not really in the business of selling Red Bulls, so.
Now, speaking about a business, Facebook.com is one of the leading sites on the internet.
It sure is.
Lots of revenue. Some people say it's valued at over $1 billion.
Really?
Certainly he turned down $1 billion offer. So
to buy, yeah.
But some people have concerns about Facebook.
They sure do. Some students at the University of Ottawa specifically filed a complaint to the Privacy Commissioner about Facebook and its settings, and what they said was a violation or at least a contradiction of Canadian privacy laws.
Now I understand you have an interview with one of those students.
That's right. We spoke to Lisa Feinberg from University of Ottawa. She's just finishing her first year and entering her second year as well. And we spoke to her a little bit about the complaints and what it was all about. So let's listen into that now.
Awesome.
My name is Lisa Feinberg. I just finished my first year of law school at the University of Ottawa. I'm currently interning with the Canadian Internet Policy and Public Interest Clinic, CIPIC, in Ottawa. And I'm here to speak about our recent privacy complaint to the Privacy Commissioner about Facebook.
Okay, Lisa, can you tell me first how it is that you and your friends got started?
Well, we noticed firstly that Facebook was really popular in Canada. There are 7 million Canadians who are signed on to Facebook, and mm-hmm. that makes it the third largest user base. And that, coupled with some of the privacy concerns that we've seen in the media and that we have noticed ourselves, incited us to start looking at some of the privacy policies and terms of use in detail to see if they did indeed violate Canadian law.
What did your research find when you started looking into this?
We found actually 22 distinct violations of PIPEDA, mm-hmm. which is the Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act, and that covers private sector organizations. So we found, I mean, to sum it up, the main things would be that Facebook wasn't being completely open about all the purposes mm-hmm. for which it was collecting and using users' information. Facebook wasn't seeking consent in a very express or transparent way.
Mm-hmm.
And that they weren't giving as much control to users as they were purporting.
Okay.
And they weren't limiting the information that was being shared.
Now, why do you think that nobody discovered this before or came across these issues before?
I don't think it was that nobody discovered it before. I think it was a huge project, and I think it took a lot of time and resources to put together such a comprehensive look at all of the policies and terms of use. So it was just something that was in the air, almost waiting to happen, I think, until someone took the time to sit down and look at these things. And there was a team, there was 5 students, I think, who were involved, and as well as Philippa Lawson, who's the director of CIPIC. So a lot of work got put into it.
it definitely does look like a lot of work, and you know, I have gone through the report that you guys have put together. It really is impressive. After you guys file a complaint, where does it go from there?
Well, the complaint has gone to the Office of the Privacy Commissioner, mm-hmm. and she has a year to investigate and report her findings. So her findings are a set of recommendations, and it's up to Facebook to decide whether to follow those recommendations, but it would be a pretty bold move if they didn't. So we're hoping that Facebook will respond, and they have shown that they're receptive to some of the recommendations. They have publicly said that they're looking forward to work with the commissioner, so we look forward to that.
Now, would those changes, would they affect just the Canadian users, or would those changes be something that would affect everyone using Facebook worldwide?
The complaint we made was under Canadian law, but I don't really know how they would go about changing their site just for Canadians. Mm-hmm. It seems like it would be easier to do something more comprehensive, especially we've asked for a lot of easy fixes.
Okay.
So, for example, when someone first signs up for Facebook, they're not brought to their default privacy settings. So we're one of the things we're asking Facebook to do is bring new users to their privacy settings. Mm-hmm. And that's especially important because right now the default settings are set to share.
Okay.
So that's another thing we've asked Facebook to do, set the settings not to share and let users opt in. And these are technical things that shouldn't be too difficult to fix.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few more if you'd like more examples that I can give.
Yeah, and we have listed a few of those on the site for those listeners who do want to look into that a little bit more detailed. So it sounds like, Lisa, from what you're saying, that the benefits from your complaint are really going to be perceived and seen by all users of Facebook, irrespective of their place of residence. So this is really a great project.
We're speaking on behalf of Canadians, but it could have much larger effects, as you've suggested.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time the Canadians have taken the lead in anything, so definitely happy to see that project. Now, Lisa, I know a lot of people are going to be wondering, you guys seem to know a lot about Facebook. Is it fair to make an assumption that you're a user as well, and the other people who are complainants in this case, are that they're users of Facebook?
Not all the complainants are users of Facebook, but a number of us are, and I am a Facebook user. But I have to say, even though I've been a Facebook user for about a year and a half now, maybe a little more, I did not know some things about Facebook that I know now from being involved in the project. So I think the will to look through all the privacy settings and policies and explore them in detail was a more recent development.
I think that's true, because a lot of people just join onto the site out of fun. You know, it's something that their friends are doing, and they don't really get bogged down in the details of looking into the policies and privacy issues.
And I think that's especially true because of the way that Facebook is representing itself. Mm-hmm. So Facebook is telling users that this is a way for them to communicate with friends, and it's telling users that they can restrict their privacy settings. So I think a lot of people don't expect the amount of information that is, for example, unwittingly shared with third-party application developers.
Okay.
So I think there are a lot of buried surprises, and even if you're pretty proficient with the privacy settings, there are things that are just buried in the privacy policy in terms of use that is surprising in light of the way Facebook advertises itself.
Okay. And maybe, Lisa, you can tell us as well how you got involved in doing this in the clinic itself and what you intend to do maybe in the future as well.
I got involved because I am very interested in social networking as a larger project, and I communicated that to Philippa Lawson, who then invited me to come on board and join up with the project. And I think the respect and the recognition of the importance of social networking sites is what led the group of us to present a way for the sites to be less invasive of privacy. And In terms of what we might be doing in the future, we would like to look at some of the other social networking sites. And I know Flippa Lawson has said publicly that she might like to take on a project looking at MySpace. But it's right now very resource limited. Yeah. So the reason that we pursued projects with Facebook is because Facebook is so widely used by Canadians. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like the most natural site to look at. But this might lead to other similar projects, just to make sure that it's fair and that all these corporations are abiding by the same rules by Canadian privacy law.
Do you intend to do this kind of work or work related to technology possibly in the future in your legal career?
Yeah, sure. I'm interested in policy and I'm interested in privacy issues. So I think those issues become particularly interesting with new technologies because they complicate what might be a more simple situation. Mm-hmm. But I think public interest work and policy work is hopefully in my future.
Well, we hope so too, considering the amount of good work that you've done so far. So thanks a lot, Lisa, for your time. And, thank you for all the good work that you guys have done.
Thanks for speaking with me.
I think Facebook certainly does have a problem with privacy. One interesting fact that I learned is that one of the perks of being a Facebook employee is not only can you look through anyone's profile you want, mm-hmm. you can also see what profiles they have visited.
That's interesting.
And I think in the long run, I don't really care if someone in California is looking at my profile, but I think that shows the attitude they have towards privacy in their website.
Mm-hmm.
There is an interesting article by Professor James Grimmelman, who's a professor at the New York Law School, and he compared Facebook to a virus. And he says it reproduces itself within a social network by convincing infected hosts to use their own replication mechanisms to spread it to others.
Why does this vaguely remind me of The Matrix?
Vaguely?
Mr. Anderson!
But Facebook isn't the only way law students are getting involved in various activism. And I believe you had an interview with another one of those students.
Yeah, actually ran into Kurma Wan, who was the complainant against McLean's as he was heading back from the airport after returning from BC. He was out there for the entire week, as we all know, for the Human Rights Commission. And we have been following the story on our site through Daniel Simard's work. But we figured it's probably about time we speak to the guy directly and hear in his own words what he had to say. So let's listen into that. So, Kurma Wan, you recently returned from BC, is that correct?
I returned this morning. So, I've got no sleep.
How did everything go in BC?
You know what? I think it went very well. We were able to present our case. The tribunal was eminently fair to both parties. We felt that there was some very strong evidence in support of our case that should have gone in, but that the tribunal excluded from consideration. So we feel that they were very fair to both parties. A number of objections that McLean's made against issues that we wanted to raise were accepted. Having said that, there were things that they fairly allowed. We feel that, it was a fair hearing for both parties.
And was there a large turnout from members of the media?
You know what? There was a large turnout from particular media, but we did get quite a bit of media over there. CBC, CTV, McLean said it sent its own editor and one or two other people down there to cover the issues. So, it was a big media event.
And we can expect, given the nature of your complaint, that the media would generally be critical of your complaint. Did you see any sympathy or any type of media outlets actually voicing any kind of support for your complaint?
Some media organizations like the CBC and CTV provided independent coverage of what was actually occurring at the hearing, mm-hmm. of what was actually being discussed, which we felt was right. There should be an independent news report of what is happening. There shouldn't just be editorializing. And while certain media organizations like the CTV and the CBC sent reporters who covered the facts of what was occurring at the hearing, others like the National Post, for instance, the Globe and Mail did not bother doing according us that courtesy. They just simply published a piece editorializing what was actually occurring at the hearings and which completely and falsely misrepresented what had occurred at the hearing. So that was unfortunate to see. And again, it reflects a mindset that, the media establishment And I want to say, like, in particular, at McLean's, for instance, they clearly don't support our complaints. They don't want to deal with the issues. They want to editorialize, deal with red herrings, and throw out red herrings out there that actually have nothing to do with the issue, which is a consistent and persistent defamation of Muslims in our mass media. That was unfortunate to see. Having said that, we did obtain some balanced coverage from some media organizations, and we're very grateful for that.
How soon can we expect a decision by the BC Human Rights Tribunal?
Well, you know what? Even we don't know. The tribunal members correctly pointed out to us that this was an important case that they were going to take, that they were going to try and get the decision out quickly, but that they would take their time to consider all the issues. There were a number of interventions in this case. We have till June the 16th to respond to whatever the interveners say, and we will be doing that. And then after that, so it will be, we do know that the decision won't be until June 16th, and it will probably be at least a few weeks after June 16th that we'll be hearing, that we will receive a decision.
Okay, and what are some potential legal consequences from this, say, if either party wants to appeal it? Where does it go from there?
Well, if it's appealed, I mean, this is the kind of issue that could go potentially all the way to the Supreme Court, because there are some important issues at play here. We believe that there are free expression issues and minority rights and discrimination and all of that that are at play over here, important charter values. But I want to point out that we don't believe that our stance is divorced from free expression. We support free expression, but we believe that free expression, when we examine the issue of free speech, it cannot be divorced from a discussion of who in our society has the power to express themselves and through which medium they have the power to express themselves. We're not all equal in that sense, and we need to look at the remedial provisions of the Human Rights Code through those lens, through that lens.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for speaking with us today, and all the best.
I think it's very interesting, though, the different ways that that law students are really taking on projects, that even if you don't agree with what they're doing, they're taking it on in the real world, that they're using the skills they learned in law school and putting it to for a cause they believe in, whether it the McLean's issue or whether it was the Facebook.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're going to law schools, to actually make it real and practical to ourselves and our lives and address issues that are of interest to us or important to us.
Well, certainly the Facebook appeal certainly addressed some very interesting things that Facebook did that I didn't even know, not in terms of a legal sense, but just in reading that.
Exactly.
The fact that applications can get your personal information even if you haven't added that application. If your friends
have added,
some of them, they can take your personal information. And you can't delete your account on Facebook, apparently. You can just deactivate it. And when you do deactivate it, you have to fill in a mandatory field about why you are, and they try to dissuade you. Like, if you say, I don't find Facebook useful, they go, hey, you might find it more useful if you connect with more of your friends. Why don't you use our friend finder to add more of... Although some people, they would claim, I guess in the more broader issue about privacy and non-terms of Facebook, is if privacy is just an outdated concept. Futurist Robert J. Sawyer, the Canadian author, had an essay online where he said that privacy was no longer relevant in our modern world. He said there's really only two reasons for there to be privacy, is, you know, a culture of shame, and he says that's kind of degrading, so no one would really care, you know, if you're doing whatever in your private life. And the other thing, of course, is if you can want to do something unethical or illegal and get away with it. His suggestion is actually we have chips implanted in our bodies that will say where we are at all times.
I have a lot of friends in the southern part of the U.S. that would probably take objection to that and would make allusions to biblical passages of the last days and the mark of the beast. But not necessarily my interpretation, but definitely interesting in any case that there are people who are advocating that type of movement.
So. Robert J. Sawyer, the Antichrist, you heard it here first, if it comes to pass.
Apparently.
The other person was David Latt, who blogs at AboveTheLaw.com. And on his personal blog, DavidLatt.typepad.com, he is currently blogging his weight loss program, where every day he blogs what he ate and the exercise he did, and he has said that every week he will post a picture of himself so we can confirm that he's not lying to us.
Because that's so exciting, and of course I want to know how much weight he's losing.
Well, that's one of the other things about the internet, right? That everyone's the minute details of their personal life are on the internet, which I guess kind of gives credence to Robert J. Sawyer's theory that people are already putting so much of their lives on the internet. I mean, you don't even have to go onto Facebook to find out how much David Latt weighs nowadays. He's just broadcasting that to the world.
If he ever tries to sue a fast food company or something like that for being obese, as we're starting to see those types of suits in the U.S., then all of that information will be very well documented. You're right about that.
Exactly. It's now, I think we mentioned this on our last podcast where we talked about Facebook, but that's really an increasing problem. about plaintiffs?
It's Facebook is admissible in court, and it is being increasingly being used. So we are seeing that happen, and people probably should be a little bit more careful about what they're, what type of pictures they're showing, what they're doing, etc. on Facebook.
Well, there's actually a case just out of New Brunswick where there is information on the plaintiff's Facebook page, and the judge didn't fault the plaintiff for not disclosing it. He said in 2004, who'd heard of Facebook? But he said, you still have to disclose it now that it's out there.
Yeah.
I think actually in 2004, Facebook was only at Harvard, so this person must have really been an early adopter.
Could have been, yeah.
Yeah, so that must have been like the first expansion Facebook gave.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, so I guess the Lord giveth with being an early adventurer on Facebook, but taketh away with being involved in legal proceedings.
A lot of biblical allusions here on Law is Cool this episode, isn't there? Well, speaking about end of times, I think we're out of time for this episode of Law is Cool, so why don't we wrap it up, and we'll talk to all of our listeners next time around.
See you next time.
Okay.